This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton still claim most attention this election cycle, but in North Carolina, there are many equally important races. Analysts expect Republicans to lose some seats in the General Assembly, and while no one thinks the Republicans will lose their majority, a growing number of observers think they could lose their supermajority. That's the 3/5 vote needed to override a governor's veto. WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin has looked at the races and joins me now to tell us more. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Frank.
Well, tell us about this supermajority, because it certainly has worked in favor of Republicans in the past when they had a Democratic governor.
Indeed. And this is really important because as it looks more and more like Roy Cooper might potentially beat Governor McCrory, you'll then have a Democrat in the executive mansion, but you'll still have a, as you said earlier, a Republican-controlled General Assembly. So, of course, you have a little bit of gridlock there, not unlike what you're seeing up at Capitol Hill these days. But if one party does have that 3/5 majority in both chambers here in North Carolina, then they can pass a bill. Sure, the governor might veto it, but they can come back and override and pass it along anyway. So, it's important to keep an eye on.
And just to talk about the rules, you have to have that 3/5 majority in both chambers to be utterly veto-proof, right?
Yeah, that's accurate. And that's a good distinction because if you look at the Senate, I think it's pretty unlikely. Well, you said it's definitely unlikely that Democrats are going to take any kind of a majority. Honestly, I would say it's even an uphill battle for them to wrestle away the supermajority in the Senate, but the House, that's where there's some possibilities.
So tell us about the analysis. What are you looking at to come up with these projections?
So what we did is we decided to do this purely numbers-driven, right? I'm the data reporter, so I want to look at pure numbers. We looked at races 2 years ago and 4 years ago, and we're sort of candidate agnostic, but looked at the parties. If the if one party took 60% of the vote 2 years ago, we considered that to be highly likely that it would go the same direction this year. If a candidate or a party took 55% 2 years ago, we considered that likely. Everything else, so within that 10-point swing, we considered to be roughly in play.
All right. So that's what you did. So what did you find?
In the Senate, we found that there's 7 races that are, you know, quote unquote, in play. But Republicans do hold a good majority of those. It's actually 6-1 that they hold right now. So that's where we sort of said, OK, Senate probably unlikely. Now, in the House, you're looking at something that's a little bit more likely. You've probably got in the neighborhood of 13 races that are sort of, you know, in play or that would fall in that 10% range. And that's important because, you know, if Democrats win enough of those races, they could wrestle away that supermajority.
All right. And, of course, a lot of this, we're talking about in play, not in play. There are a number of races that, quite sadly, because of redistricting, are not in play. They're not competitive at all.
Yeah. I mean, and in many cases, I mean, in nearly 50 cases or excuse me, more than 50 cases in the House, you have an uncontested race. And that's, you know, Democrats and Republicans. You know, you mentioned gerrymandering. Certainly that's playing a factor. I mean, look, geographies play a factor as well. In some cases, there are just districts, no matter how you draw them, that they're going to be favorable for one party or another. Those are just the facts. But yeah, gerrymandering has definitely affected some of these House races and Senate races as well.
Well, favorable. I mean, you can do a rough count of registered voters in any district, and you will find that there is a majority of one party over the other registered voters in every district in the country. The question is whether or not one party or the other feels it's even worth it because of the numbers to even run a candidate. And this state has one of the highest numbers of uncontested General Assembly races, districts in the country.
Yeah, that's accurate. It's what I think the number is like 48% of all General Assembly races are uncontested or don't have a Democrat-Republican opposition.
Right.
The national average is closer to 38%, I think. So, yeah, we're a good bit higher than the national average.
All right. So what do you do now? So you're looking at these numbers, and again, so some question of whether or not it's viable and, you know, kind of what's in play. What other factors do you look at apart from registered voters? Is there a way of looking at voting trends and perhaps what issues drive voters in elections?
Well, you touched on the issues. Let me first say one of the biggest growing demographics actually is unaffiliated voters. So that's something to keep an eye on where if you're claiming a party, you're pretty reliably going to vote for that party. But, you know, if you're unaffiliated, you know, you're definitely in play. But you mentioned the issues, and of course HB2 is a big one. And this could be a really big factor, particularly in the governor and general assembly races this year, because 4 years ago when Governor McCrory ran for the first time, as you know, he was a well-loved mayor in Charlotte for many years. You know, even the Charlotte Observer endorsed him for many years in a row, even though they tend to endorse more Democrats than Republicans. But what you're seeing this year is, of course, the HB2 issue, and many people in Charlotte are taking that, regardless of your opinion on bathrooms, they're taking this as a, here's the General Assembly that is coming down here and telling us what we can and can't do. We don't like that. So it's highly possible that in particularly districts in Charlotte that voted heavily for the governor 4 years ago might flip that and vote for Cooper this time around, and especially so because 4 years ago in Charlotte, you saw people that voted, that split their ticket, say they voted for Obama, but also for McCrory. I think it's far less likely that you're going to see something along those lines this year, and that could be enough to tip the scales, A, in the governor's race, but then down ticket also for some of the General Assembly races that are in and around Charlotte.
And what about that? I mean, Wake and Mecklenburg, certainly for the statewide races like U.S. Senate and governor, where you can't gerrymander a district, you got to run statewide, and those urban districts are really important. Now, how does that play out when you look at a district by district races in the General Assembly?
Yeah, no, it's interesting that, you know, the ones that are most in play definitely are Raleigh, Charlotte. I mean, you look at Wake County, you look at Mecklenburg County, you know, certainly there are some outliers. I'm not going to say that there are no rural races that aren't in play. Certainly there are some, but primarily they're in Wake County. You know, you look at, for example, Nelson Dollar in southwest Wake County. He could be in play. Marilyn Avila, Briar Creek. Look at a guy like Gary Pendleton in North Raleigh. He won by just 1,200 votes 2 years ago. You know, 1,200 votes in an area that's as big as North Raleigh, that's not hard to flip. So those are some areas to look at. But for Democrats, they have to be careful too. You know, the thing that we keep hearing is that Democrats have to flip four seats in the House, four seats. Yeah, that's true. They have to net four seats. It's not just winning four more seats. They got to hold on to the ones they got and then get four more. If you look at, for example, Gail Adcock, she's in Cary. A couple years ago, she beat out Tom Murray. Tom Murray was the Republican incumbent. Gail Adcock works at SAS, well-beloved. She won that seat, but she only took 51% of the vote. So certainly, by no means is that you know, a guaranteed hold, and there are other races like that around the state as well. So if Democrats want to make any inroads, A, they have to hold on to the seats they have, and then B, of course, win those additional ones.
Now, as part of this, you you looked at the numbers, but you also talked to others to sort of validate or at least check your results against others to make sure we were on the right track. So who else did you talk to, and what are they saying about
that? Yeah, so, that, you know, all the standard people that that the listeners have probably heard of, the Dallas Woodhouses, the Greer Martins, you know, the political analysts that are out there sort of.
So Dallas Woodhouse, Republican head
right.
of the Republican Party. Greer.
Exactly. Greer, okay. he's a state senator, and he's in, you know, he does a lot to caucus for campaign for a lot of other candidates. They looked at the numbers. They said the numbers are maybe a bit higher. You know, in presidential elections, you tend to get a little bit of a higher turnout. Democrats particularly tend to turn out in higher numbers for a presidential election. So maybe we could have bumped that up to say like 57% and 63%, which would bring in another, you know, three or four races. But, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're talking 20 races or 25 races, I mean, that's sort of the number that you're looking at.
We talked about gerrymandering being a big part of the 2014 election. Mm-hmm. You spoke with Kim Hargett, who is running for in a House District 55. Describe that district and her attitude about this race.
Yeah, so I think this is a perfect case in point for gerrymandering. District 55 is down in Anson County and part of Union County, which is basically if you're going from Charlotte to Wilmington, you drive straight through these rural areas. Now, it used to be It was actually 69 at the time, but the district was all of Anson County and then just a little bit to the west of Union County. Well, what's happened now is after the redistricting, the district literally carves directly around the town of Wingate. Now, why that's important is because Wingate has a university in it, and obviously also being more of an urban center. I'm, you know, not that Wingate is urban, but, you know, more so than the rural areas surrounding it, tended to vote a little bit more Democratic. Anson County, for many, many consecutive elections, had voted reliably blue. I mean, up and down, very blue. Now, all of a sudden, the district that includes Anson County has crept into Union County, more rural, more Republican voters. Now, all of a sudden, you have that one that has turned red. And, of course, then to the west, Wingate gets brought into the former District 68, which is majority Union County, now that one also is red. So instead of having a red next to a blue, because of the gerrymandered district, especially around Wingate, you now have two reds.
All right. So let's talk about, because this kind of business used to be relatively easy. You could count the registered voters in the district, and then you'd have to look at those unaffiliated voters and decide which way they were going to go. This time, it seems to me there's one more wild card, and that is simply voter turnout, given what's happening at the presidential level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a major wild card. Trump is really trying to make it hard on the pollsters. You've got voters that are just really frustrated. I mean, you have Republican voters that don't like Trump. You have Democratic voters that don't like Hillary. What are they going to do? They maybe don't unlike their candidate enough to vote for the other candidate, but maybe they just kind of throw their hands up and say, I'll see you in 2 or 4 years. And voter turnout at that point will be a good bit lower. It's a great question, and frankly, I think it's one that we don't know the answers to. You know, pollsters have sort of been split on the issue. They think that people almost are going to turn out in higher numbers to vote against a candidate. Others say, no, that's ridiculous. If you really don't like your candidate, you're not going to come out. It's a great question, and one that I don't know that we have necessarily a great answer to, but that is absolutely the wild card.
All right, well, we will stay tuned. Jason DeBruin, WNC's data reporter. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks very much.
Just ahead, our election 2016 coverage continues. We're going to talk with North Carolina Supreme Court Justice Bob Edmonds. He's running for re-election, and we'll talk with him on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us.